There, let me remind you, this evening we're here together at 6:30 to wait and worship together. I have no idea what's going to happen, so I can't tell you, but we'll worship together and then wait on God and see what he does. We'd love for you to join us if you're able to on Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock, we're on Zoom for our prayer meeting. And on Friday morning at 9:30, we're here as well to pray together. If you're able to join us for either or both, we'd love to see you there. And I think I've just seen one of the newest members of our family together, Davilis Edrick. Davilis Edrick, I guess, is a few weeks old. So why don't you welcome him this morning? It's lovely to see you. Exodus chapter 13 and verse 17 says, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt ready for battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him because Joseph had made the Israelites swear an oath. He had said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up with you from this place. After leaving Succoth, they camped at Etham on the edge of the desert. By day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light so that they could not travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. Then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. They are to encamp by the sea directly opposite Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's hearts, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites did this. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, what have we done? We've let the Israelites go and have lost their services. So he and his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped near the sea near Pi Hahiroth, opposite Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Moses answered the people, do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance of the Lord. Deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other side, so neither went near the other all night long. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. The Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He jammed the wheels of their chariot so that they had difficulty driving. And the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen." Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. We started last week thinking about encounters with God, and very specifically, the God who speaks. And I guess this is one of the most famous stories in Scripture. The children of Egypt have been captive. The children of Israel have been captive in Egypt. And following the plagues, Pharaoh lets them go. And God's leading them. Leads them by a pillar of cloud in the daytime and a pillar of fire at night. There's no need for them to wonder which way shall we go. Should we turn right or left here? When should we go? All of that is crystal clear because there is a pillar of cloud in front of them and a pillar of fire at night in front of them, leading them. They don't have to wonder if they've gone the right way or if they've done the right thing. All of that questioning is removed because there is a visible evidence of the Lord's guidance with them. But God doesn't take them the most direct route, out of concern that if they were to face war, they'd decide to go back. He's conscious of their frailty, and the journey's determined accordingly. So we get to Exodus 14, and God speaks to Moses. And it's very precise, and yet vague at the same time. It's very precise, and yet it's vague at the same time. God says, "Tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi Haharoth, between Migdol and the sea. Then encamp by the sea, directly opposite Baal Zephon." I mean, that couldn't be clearer. Where are you to go? Turn back and encamp near Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. They're to encamp by the sea directly opposite Baal Zephon. He gives them a precise location to go and camp. And then he tells them what their enemy's going to think. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And then he tells him what his purpose is in all of this. "I will harden Pharaoh's heart and he will pursue them, but I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord." He tells the Israelites where they need to be, what their enemy is going to think, and what his purpose is in all of it. And so they do what they're told. They turn back and they camp where they've been asked to camp. They're exactly where God has asked them to be. When all Pharaoh's horses and chariots come marching after them. And suddenly this doesn't feel like such a great plan. They don't sit there and go, right, well, we're where God has asked us to be. He's led us out by a pillar of cloud in the daytime and a pillar of fire by night. He's spoken precisely to Moses about our location right now. He brought us out this way to save us from war. And he's going to get glory here. The detail of God's hand in the journey to this point seems to disappear in light of the presence of an enemy and the uncertainty we're now faced. God's told them where to camp. He's told them what Pharaoh's going to think, and he's told them Pharaoh's going to come after them. And all that's fine, but then we seem to skip the main part of the story, and God says, and I'm going to get glory. Right? You need to camp precisely here. Turn back and encamp in this place. Pharaoh will think you're wandering around in confusion. I'll harden his heart and he'll come after you. And then I'll get glory. Well, how? How? We know the outcome of the story. God's going to get glory. All of Egypt will know he is the Lord. But how do we get there, Lord? Because you've been very precise about where we need to be. You're going to harden Pharaoh's heart, but how does that get us to your glory? How do we deal with the approaching enemy? How do we deal with the potential of this onslaught? What is meant to happen now? And the Israelites find themselves in despair. Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. The miracles that brought them out of Egypt. Remember all them plagues where God showed off his glory? The way God has led them is now all lost in the face of the fact we don't know how this situation plays out. And our assumption is it's not good. It's not enough for the Israelites that God has spoken of the outcome. He's told them he's going to get glory. Egypt will know that I am the Lord. The challenge is, we're backed against the sea. They're coming towards us. We've got nowhere to go. What happens here? And I feel like God quite often speaks in detail and vagueness. I have great and precious promises. That's what Peter tells me. He's given me great and precious promises. And yet often I have no idea how he's going to fulfill them. I have no idea how this is going to work out. In fact, at times it seems like the very opposite is happening to the thing that he promised. And I don't find myself encouraged by the promise, but frustrated by it. Because how? Thank you for assuring me that all things are going to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose. Thank you, Lord. But how? Because that's not really what I see right now. It's not really what I feel right now. And there's a challenge in that for us, I think. God speaks, and he's told you the outcome. And yet, at times we find ourselves in despair about the process. Let me remind you, you can be assured of the outcome in spite of the process. Everything he's spoken will come to pass. Everything he's promised, he's going to do. That's the nature of God. He does not lie. And the process might not be what you imagined it to be, but the outcome is still assured. But what captivated my heart of Exodus 14 was Exodus 14 and verse 15. Because God says something to Moses that I don't think he's meant to say. Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Moses has told them something beautiful. Exodus 14 and verse 13. Moses answered the people, "Don't be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance of the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." It's beautiful. I've listened to people quote it, to people sing it, to people encourage one another with it. But I've never heard anybody include Exodus 14, 15 with those couple of verses where the Lord turns to Moses and says, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites, go forward." Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to go forward. Tell the Israelites to move on. I don't think that's what God's meant to say when you cry out to him. Right? I don't think that's meant to be the... I mean, I have never prayed and hoped the response is, "Why are you crying out to me?" I don't think that's how this is meant to go. Please understand, I'm not here this morning to undermine the value of crying out to him. The importance of prayer. The significance of that. But there is a time where you need to just get up and get on with it. In Joshua chapter 7, the Israelites have gone to war in Ai and suffered a bit of a defeat. So Joshua and the elders prostrate themselves on the floor, put ash on their head, lie around the ark. In Joshua 7, verse 10, God turns to Joshua and says, "What are you doing lying on the floor? Get up." Because the issue of their defeat is that they've sinned. They took stuff they weren't meant to have and they kept it. They've sinned. And what God says to Joshua is, this isn't all sorted because you lie down on your face and prostrate yourself before me. Go and sanctify yourselves. Get rid of the stuff you're meant to get rid of. Deal with the stuff you're meant to have dealt with. This doesn't happen on your face. This happens because you take action. The children of Israel don't cross the Red Sea because Moses prayed. They cross the Red Sea because Moses extended his arm with that stick in his hand. The Lord parted the waters and then they went and got into them. Let me tell you, if ever there was a time I'd be praying, the sea banked up on either side of me. Lord, you better get me through this. That aquarium with no walls. The little fish looking at you. What are you doing in here? Oh, we're just going across. I mean, how nervous would you be? My journey would start very slowly and end very quickly. Right? The trepidation of putting your foot in, hoping that it doesn't all suddenly come crashing down. And then sprinting. Some people might have got shoved out my way if I was crossing the Red Sea. Because I'm taking note. But this isn't going to happen because you stop and pray. It's going to happen because you're obedient to what he's asked of you. And I wonder, if at times God asks of us, what are you doing crying out to me? There's a point, I think, where our prayer life can just be disobedience. Because sometimes I'm asking God to do stuff that God's asking me to do. So as I pray, for people to get saved, for people to come to know him, I wonder if times if God says to me, what are you doing crying out to me? I've told you, go and make disciples. What are you doing crying out to me? Because it's all well and good asking him to do it, but if you don't do what he's asked of you, does it work? And it's an incredible story, the parting of the Red Sea. All of the Israelites walk through on dry ground. But it's birthed out of obedience. And there are moments, I think, where we ask God to do what he's asking us to do. There's a... a staggering truth in Scripture. God tells Noah to build the ark. And it says, in the days of Noah, the Lord waited patiently for Noah to build the ark. The Lord waited patiently for Noah to build the ark. The ark wasn't going to be built because Noah prayed. If Noah took a day off, it was a day longer before the ark was built and the purposes of God come to pass. God's waiting for Noah to do what he's been told to do. And I quite fancy the idea of a Red Sea moment. I mean, that seems where a nation knows he is the Lord because of the way God moves and delivers his people. I mean, that's significant, right? That's something that would seem to matter. But maybe I need to go and do what he's told me to then. And this probably isn't the best message for encouraging you to come to a worship and waiting evening. Or to gather you in prayer meetings. But I don't want this to be people who just want to meet with God and indulge ourselves. And there's something about the reality of faith that means I can't wait till I'm absolutely 100% sure. That sometimes I just have to do what I think he's asking me to do, in spite of the discomfort, in spite of the awkwardness of it, in spite of the risk that it seems to be. That sometimes I have to just respond to where he's leading me in spite of how uncomfortable it makes me. And you can imagine Moses telling the Israelites, move on, and their response being, where to? Because they're in front of us and the sea's behind us, and where do you want us to go? Are we going to go in the sea? Sorry, Moses, they didn't teach us to swim when we were slaves in Egypt. They weren't down the local leisure centre with us going, hey, here's your certificate for level 3. You can do a length now. But God's response to their panic and their fear as they cry out to him, uncertain of what's next, is, why are you crying out to me? Is what he said not enough? And I told you last week, my intention was to draw your attention to the moments where God didn't show up and just change everything. Because we, when we think of encounters with God, that's generally where our heads go, right? That he shows up and everything's different now. But what if he shows up and just asks you to be obedient? Just asks you to do what he's already told you to? What if that's the word of the Lord to you today? And some of us come again and again asking for him to speak, and he keeps saying, why don't you just do what you've been told? Have you done that thing I asked of you yet? Why are you crying out to me? Get on with it. Luke chapter 6. And you don't do what I say. And the truth is that for many of us, that's where we find ourselves at times. Because we haven't done what he's asked us to do. Just ask you to be obedient to what he's already said. Sometimes your encounter with God is not to give you fresh revelation, to ask you to do something new, but it's just to do what he's already asked you to do. That when he shows up to Joshua in Joshua 7 and says, what are you doing on the floor? Go and sanctify yourselves. It's not a new instruction. You were never meant to have that stuff in the first place. You chose to sin, and now you wonder why you're struggling. Go and deal with the sin. Maybe things will be different. I want God to do something significant amongst us. I'm hungry for him to move. I'm hungry for him to make a mark on this city in my day and in my generation. But I need to do what he's called me to do. I need to serve him as he's called me to serve him. And I don't need special revelation for that. I've got plenty of things he's asked of me, just written in his word. I want to be obedient to what he's asked me to do. And sometimes that's what he shows up and says. Maybe I don't need more power. Maybe I don't need more instruction. Maybe I don't need a new word or fresh revelation. Maybe I just need to get on with what he's already asked of me and trust him in the process in spite of the uncertainty. Shall we stand together and worship?